Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Before we jump into our conversation, I want to welcome you all back to the program here. Good morning to Baltimore. Good morning to Maryland, Washington, D.C., and America. We are here on Mark Steiner Show now on 9 to 11 a.m. We were followed by Michelle Martin in 1 hour. Tell me more. Great new lineup. Sandy Mallory will bring you her beautiful perspectives coming on at noon after that. Then comes the bass man, of course, for the rest of the afternoon, leading up to my dear friend Anthony McCarthy, who's taken over what used to be our slot, 5 to 7 p.m. here at WEAA. So it's a great new lineup we're very excited about. And want to invite all of you to join us this Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, I should say, 4 p.m., from 4 to 7 p.m., Michelle Martin and Anthony McCarthy and I are hosting an event here at WEAA, asking all of our friends and listeners to join us to meet Michelle, celebrate our new lineup here at WEAA, 4 to 7 p.m., light refreshments, great conversation, open to the public, see the beautiful artwork on the walls as well. So come to WEAA Studios between 4 and 7 p.m. this Thursday evening, 4 to 7. So we are now here in the studio. I forgot one very important thing that keeps us on the air. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information, www.mecu.com. Or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. It's always there. And all the information about MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is right there. Okay. We are joined now by Eric Berryman, who's in the studio. He's one of the two men performing in this incredible production, Top Dog, Underdog, written by the great playwright Suzanne Laurie Parks. Eric Berryman is a resident of the company member of Everyman Theater. And joins us in studio. And Eric, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. WEAA is the media sponsor for this particular production. That's not why we're doing this. We do this all the time in Theater Baltimore, as we call it. But we are the sponsors. And we saw the play. Valerie and I saw the play last Friday night, I think. Incredible production. Incredible. And Eric Berryman is sitting here with his glasses on. Not looking at all like the character he plays. Incredible transformation. Good to have you here, man.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, this is how I look on a normal basis. Got my 1950s, 1960s spectacles on, and got my little hat, and the cornrows are underneath this hat here, so it's there. But
your character's cornrows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The character. Yeah. I don't normally wear those on a daily.
But so you're keeping them in through the whole production.
Oh yeah, they're in there. That's my real hair.
So talk about this play a bit. For
Man,
our listeners,
this play, Top Dog, Underdog, is a two-hander, two-person play about two brothers that were left on their own by their parents at a very, very early age, 16, 11, that their parents left, mother and father, they left them to fend for themselves. They each were given some go-away money. They were given an inheritance, they call it, a couple hundred dollars that they were given, and kind of left, like I said, to fend on their own. And their names, interestingly enough, are Lincoln and Booth. And they were named that, they discover or find out, as kind of a joke by their father, a very twisted joke. So it's an interesting setup, this play. And kind of we see them, their day-to-day activities, their jobs or lack thereof of jobs, and of them just trying to rise out of their current predicament together.
And one brother, a guy who plays your brother, first pops up in the play in whiteface because he's playing Lincoln.
Yeah,
on the...
he has this really twisted job, man. His name is Lincoln, and his job is an amusement park kind of sideshow, in a sense that he dresses up like Abraham Lincoln with the top hat, the coat, everything. And since he's black, he wears whiteface, and he sits down, and people come by and shoot him and reenact the assassination of Lincoln. So they come and pick up cap guns, and they shoot and fire, and he falls down. And this is his job every day. And, that stems from an earlier play that Susan Laurie Parks wrote called The America Play, which is essentially about a guy who's a Lincoln impersonator, a black man who's a Lincoln impersonator. And so she took that idea and she said, well, you know, so that play is, you know, largely about this guy and his job. I want to kind of explore what happens to a guy like that that goes home. Where is a guy that is a Lincoln impersonator? Where is he going home to? What is home? What would drive him to do this? So it's two separate guys, two separate characters, but they just happen to have the same job. And then from there, Top Dog Underdog was birthed from that idea.
And this is very much about the conflict and relationship between two brothers, very intense, living
very
in a, like almost a tenement house.
Yeah, they do. It's a basically a studio apartment. No
bathroom
sink,
down the hall.
Bathroom down the hall. This kind of boarding room house. I think she describes this, you know, this derelict house that they live in. And it's the brother, the younger brother, Booth, my character's apartment. And since the older brother is, you know, him and his wife are separated and he has nowhere to go and no friends, no nothing. And his former hustling life he's trying to escape from. So he has nowhere he can turn to.
The card game.
Yeah. So the older brother is a former three card Monte hustler. You know, you see the guys on the corner, red card, the queen, you know, things like that. So he was the master of that. But he left that because some tragic stuff happened and he realized that this is not a life I should be living. It was his addiction. It really was. It was his addiction. So he left all his friends and all that community behind and is trying to live a straight-laced life. So to him, this Lincoln impersonating job is, you know, kind of his redemption at a new life. And he's living with his brother and, like I said, in this little apartment. And the brother has a bed and the older brother that, you know, has moved in is sleeping on a recliner, on a lazy boy, old, you know. So that's all they got, man. But they got that and they have their memories, you know. Yeah.
So talk a bit about how did you become an actor? Where did that start for you?
I came out of the womb, and that's pretty much how it started. But it's weird, you know. People ask me. I have people I meet or friends. They ask me, you know, oh, when did you decide? You know, you wanted to be actor. When did you start? And I say, you know,
in vitro.
I don't really have you know that moment of like, and that moment. I saw this show and, you know,
it's something you've always wanted.
It really has just been something that it's just, it's not even a matter of I desired it. It was just like the path that I was on. It became that way. I grew up in a very artistic family and always had art around me, you know, music and things like that. And you know, I played instruments for a time and it just kind of, but acting and, you know, just was just something that was, I guess, born in me. You know, I always say I have a family of storytellers, you know, uncles and cousins that, you know, they just tell the best stories and have you cracking up at the Thanksgiving day, you know, table or things like that. And so I grew up in that very kind of charismatic environment and I was just a character, man, as a child. So it was just like, well, since he's talking too much in school, maybe we'll put him somewhere where he can talk a lot and, you know, won't get in trouble.
So where'd you go to school?
So elementary school, a few different schools I went to.
You grew up here in Baltimore, right?
Oh, yeah, I grew up here in Baltimore.
Even though you're in New York now.
Yeah, so I live in New York, but I grew up in Baltimore. So, you know, elementary, middle school, I went to a school called Lockraven Academy over by Calvert Hall College. And at the time that I went there, it was really, really big in the magnet school scene. So, you know, we had an arts extension and, you know, there's a science extension, things like that. So, of course, I, you know, did theater and acting there. And then high school, I got accepted into the Baltimore School for the Arts and I spent my 4 years of more training there. And then from there, like I said, it was just kind of like a natural path to go on to college and keep doing it. And it was never a matter of, you know, if it's possible. It was just a matter of when it's going to happen, you know, for me. And, you know, and it's weird to think and look back on that, but it really how it kind of developed.
So when you have these two characters and you had to find your character here in this character of yours, which is, I mean, the way you come on stage is amazing in terms of the power and essence of the street in a wannabe hustler and knowing how to take stuff that doesn't belong to you.
Yeah.
But your whole mannerism, that was, you've kind of consumed that.
Yeah, very much so. It becomes quite fun to take on something that, you know, to a certain extent, you know, a character like that has a, you know, it's a style. And it's a swagger, you know, people are using these days, you know, the term swagger, you know. And he, you know, he has this style that, you know, you see every day people are trying to, you know, imitate, you know, for good and bad. And so it's fun And it also, I think for me, it stems from, you know, I love music. So for me, music will inform how something is. So it's like I have a soundtrack going on in my head before the show and sometimes during the show that fits into the landscape of who I feel that this guy is. And the music informs his environment, the street, the everything, you know, about it. And it's also me just trying to, you know, I'm a storyteller. You know, so my job is to, you know, for the people out there that they exist, that they don't have the capacity to tell their story because, you know, they can't or because they don't have the tools to successfully, you know, tell their story. I'm there to kind of pay homage to them, you know, and, you know, these are guys that are on the street right now. These are guys that are not on the street anymore because of various reasons. And I think that their voice needs to be heard. So I just try to try to portray it in the best way possible, in the realest way possible, that they don't get, you know, that it's not like a caricature, hopefully, of them.
I wish we had a clip to play just to give a sense of how you transform yourself
to be
this person. Because it's the one of the beautiful things about acting is to see somebody find that place and time, find the essence of another human being that they have to embody and become.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's like you don't realize how effective it's going to be, or you're like, man, but do I sound as different as I'm trying to, or do I, is it coming across? But I think after the first week we did the show, I was in the lobby just kind of hanging around, because the way the new Everyman is, it's wonderful that you can come and there's, you know, the bars open, you know, late, you know, after the show, so you can come, and it's really an experience. You can kind of take your time and get something to drink, you know, chill out, relax, you know, it's a really great environment. So I was just in the lobby just, you know, hanging out afterwards, just, you know, by myself on my phone, and a couple, you know, my phone, yeah. Modern world here.
Modern world, right.
Sometimes
right.
I read books, you know. No, I do. No, and so I'm just sitting there, and a couple was at the bar, and they look over, and you could see that they kind of noticed me, and, you know, he wanted to say something. So the guy kind of gave a thumbs up, you know, this, you know, older white couple, and he says, you know, good job or whatever, you know. But I kind of feel it's one of those things, you know, that you say just because you see an actor, so it's like you don't want to be like, yeah, you sucked, you know.
So
they feel, you know, kind of obligated to be like, oh, you know, good job or whatever. And, you know, so they got up the nerve to kind of come over me and, you know, talk to me. You know, we'll talk to one of the actors, you know, they're subscribers and, you know, one of the, you know, comedy members. And as I'm talking to them, I can kind of see that, you know, they didn't really like, and it's fine. I don't think it was their bang. The show maybe necessarily was their particular, you know, bang. They weren't really in love with the show, but I think they started to like it even more when they started talking to me. And the guy goes, "You're really good," he said, "because you sound nothing like what I just saw."
Yeah, no, you do not.
Like, I think the fact of talking to me kind of made him realize, wow, they were doing something more than I think I thought they were doing. You know, or these. They, you know, acting in a sense. I mean, my grandmother saw the show, you know, opening, and she gave this really weird, backhanded, but beautiful comment. You know, she's just looking at me after the show in the lobby, and she's just like, I've never seen you act before. She's like that. I mean, you were acting. And my mother starts laughing harder. She's like, no, I didn't mean it like that, you know. She's like, of course I've seen, you know, transform or do this or do that. But she was like, I mean, you just... so that was really cool to spread. And that, for me, that was awesome, because my fear sometimes is really that when people that know me come and see shows, they're just going to come and be like, oh, there's Eric, you know, doing a show, because they know me so well, because they know so many different facets of you, that even when you think you're pulling out another facet of you, it's just another part they see of you. So to hear and come see someone that's known me and raised me say, wow, I, you know, you really were, it's like, whoo, great, you know.
Well, you did. And the show has so much tension and power
in it,
comedy.
It has to.
You don't know how it's going to end. You have a feeling how it might end. That you can just taste the tension in the between the two brothers, and you have to, and it's also just full of scenes that just make you laugh. And I just
good.
Now, Eric Behrman, I you're an amazing actor. Top Dog Underdog is an incredible play. I think Suzanne Laurie Parks is one of America's great playwrights.
Yes.
Sometimes I think it takes a woman to see what a man really does. And the way she writes is, she's amazing. But let me remind you, Top Dog Underdog is now playing at Everyman Theater through this coming Sunday.
Yes.
Final week. Tickets and other information, 410-752-2208. That's 410-752-2208. Or you can just go to Everyman Theater. everymantheater.org. So if you're listening to us at your workplace right now, don't miss it. Just go to everymantheater.org, and you want to check out Top Dog Underdog. One of the best plays I've seen in a long time. Incredible acting on a part of both these actors, one of them being Eric Berryman, who's been in our studio. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you.
We're going to take a very brief break and come back. We're going to explore the life of Malcolm Shabazz. Stay with us.